Meetings to order. Today is March 26, 2007, and colleagues, today we continue public hearing on House Bill 5037, the budget of the Oregon Military Department. We're going to kind of try to motor through the rest of the presentation here, and then what I was thinking is that if we can get done by 4 o'clock, those of you who have interest hopefully might like to come out and see the civil support team tour in front of the Capitol, walk through some of the important equipment that we fund that help in emergencies.
Cool.
Anything else you would like to tee up, Mr. Borden, or are we ready to roll?
I think we're ready to roll.
All right. General Caldwell.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, good to be back here to finish our try to motor through this thing. As you said, last session, there was a question about construction managers and how many, what they did. We prepared a sheet. I think it's been handed out. roughly summarized for the record. I should introduce myself. I'm Brigadier General Mike Caldwell, Deputy Director of the Oregon Military Department. You can see that we have 8 positions. 2 of them are limited duration. The funds that pay for them are on the right side of the column. These project managers, there's 12 significant projects going on right now, 40 smaller projects, about $300 million worth of construction. And I've listed the significant projects below. So in case you have any other questions, I'll be happy to answer those on that particular subject. Mr. Chairman, when we finished up last week, we were at policy option package 209 at deferred maintenance. So I think we'll just start out there. As you can see, this is for $1,412,951, and it allows us to take some corrective action on 10 of the worst-conditioned armories. There's 4 roofs, 3 HVAC systems, 2 building exteriors, 1 compliance condition is involved in that. And I discussed the armory or the Dallas project earlier. That's still not certain whether or not we're going to continue on with that or not, based on further analysis and what we want to do with that facility based on the severity of it. The next package is storefront recruiting, which basically is funded by the federal government. And these storefront recruiting stations are 100% funded by the feds at total is $619,059 is the total package. These are all federal funds, and we were authorized that by the National Guard Bureau to go out and place our recruiting stations in malls, et cetera. So that's DAS handles all that. We just let them do the leasing on it by the rules, and then we pay the bill. The next one is 213 electrical security system. Here again is a federal funds limitation increase of $50,000. These are 100% federal funds. These are the security systems we put in our armories that have on all of our vaults and all of our sensitive items for weapons and other high-dollar sensitive items that are all centrally wired into a location so we can respond if there's ever a break-in. Policy option package 214. Is for Portland Air Base and Kingsley Field, and this is for our facilities operations budgets. Both the federal government reimburses us 80% required, and the state's required 20% match for Portland, and at Klamath Falls, it's an 85% federal reimbursement and 15% from the state. The reason that is because Klamath Falls is a training base where we train F-15 pilots, and we're seeing some activity, or we're seeing some significant increase because we're now training active duty pilots there as well because of the addition of the F-22 fighter into Tyndall Air Force Base. Then that pushed out the F-15 training, and they needed a place to put it, and they came to us and asked us if we would do it there because we already had the setup, which increased the employment base as well. So both of those have seen some increases because of normal inflation, but Klamath Falls is even more so. 215, maintenance manager reclasses. These, again, as I expressed, I think it was on Friday or Thursday, We've gone through and looked at all of our positions, tried to go through all of them. I don't think we're completely through with them yet. And this was a salary inequity that was created, or not created, but it was part of the trades classification study done by DAS. So we had to realign those in order to be in compliance with our positions with respect to that study. In these positions, these employees are all of this work is being reviewed by DAS. But since they've been approved by DAS, we're now paying them work out of class, so that has to come out of a different pot. So we put it in this budget to try to get it corrected, so it's squared away, so we don't take money out of maintenance to pay for salaries. Program option package 401 is Oregon Youth Challenge Fund shift. Here again, it's a shift to try to get our employees under the general fund column as opposed to the other fund column. That a couple reasons for that. The main reason is that when you don't have that have them in the right column when there's negotiated increases in salary across the board salaries through the union process and also through health insurance. If you don't have it in that, then you've got to reach down in the pocket someplace else and bring it back. So it makes it a lot simpler. It's not a program deal with maker or breaker, but it does set the books up correctly, but it costs money to do that. 402 is a youth challenge position reclass. Again, we talked about that, going through and looking at all these positions. Employees that are currently in these positions are performing the duties according to the study, and their reclassifications were done according to that, and so we would like to get them again in the right spot so we get those positions properly in our budget. Program option package 403 is limited duration to permanent. The policy package requests the establishment of the permanent group life supervisor positions at the Youth Challenge and also the one cook position. This was approved as a limited duration package during the interim, during this current biennium. And we recognize that we believe this cook position has been invaluable for us keeping our food service costs down. As I expressed to you in previous testimony, we're spending about $9 a day for cadet food compared to the average program costing about $13.34. And we believe that's helped immensely by having these cooks on who can actually cook from scratch instead of buying higher expensive stuff. So we think both of those positions are important. The next one is on Youth Challenge on Service and Supplies, 405. And we were required by DAS to change our method of reporting reimbursements from the Oregon Department of Education, mainly with the school lunch program, since we qualify for that. DAS has recommended that the revenue from the Department of Education be treated as revenue transfer in, with split funding, 40% other funds, 60% federal funds, that mirror how food expenditures are paid out. It's created a need for additional limitation to accommodate this accounting correction. So we requested the extra limitation in this program option package. In program option 497, this requests 1.172842 general fund for debt service and 482533 other funds limitation for financing costs on major construction projects. You'll find that in major construction package 499 for Ontario, Camp Withicum, Woodburn, St. Helens, Newport, and Gresham. These projects are partially funded by COPs. This debt service is key to make these happen so we can link up the federal dollars, assuming we're going to get those, which we do know that Ontario is going to be, well, you never know till they pass the bill, as we all know, but Ontario is scheduled to be funded in this federal fiscal year. It's on the Future Year Defense Plan that's finally bubbled itself up into the budget cycle, and the last time we were in D.C. about 3 weeks ago, it hasn't been cut yet. The rest of them, and we talk about them in major construction, so I'll go into the major construction. It's in House Bill 5006, and this is the next policy package, 499, where we seek $70,134,036 in total funds for design and construction of Ontario, Camp Withicum, Camp Whittakum AFRC and the renovations in Woodburn, St. Helens, and Newport. So these two are linked. Existing armories, most of these were constructed in the early 50s, late 40s. And we've talked a little bit previously about their utility and their size and their ability to, so I won't bore you with that. We do have an arrangement both with Klamath, or with Ontario and Vidal's, both community colleges, Fraser Valley and Columbia Gorge. So we'll be doing shared work with them. We're on their campuses in both locations. We've made those arrangements, and then we'll have a workaround similar to what we have at Western Oregon, where they actually use our classrooms during the week when we're not there, and some other aspects of the armory, and that's all part of the in order to get the land and other considerations. We'll try to make those available to them, so it's an upfront, legit deal, but it works out well for them. In 1995, legislature approved this Ontario project, but the federal funding only supported 35% of the design. We just learned that National Guard Bureau is going to send $4.4 million in additional federal funds, and by December of this year, we expect to receive close to $12 million in federal funds to build this project, assuming that it goes on with the 1 October date where they actually pass a budget, which may or may not happen, but we need to plan for it in case that it is. Also, we need to review the Dalles Readiness Center. This was previously approved, but it wasn't in the governor's recommended budget, but the governor's office has since, and frankly, we didn't put it there because we knew it had been moved out to, originally it was planned for 2009. We think it's been slipped to 2011. What we recommended in this case is we put a $1 holding placeholder in the budget for this year. However, we do expect in FY09, or federal fiscal year 09, that we should be getting $800,000 in for design of that facility. We're estimating it's going to be a $9 million facility, and we think it should be here in 2010 or perhaps 11, depending, again, on how the federal government decides to operate. The Camp Whittakum project is currently a product of the base realignment and closure process that the federal government went through, and this facility would include a consolidation of our armory currently at Tigard in Lake Oswego, as well as U.S. Army Reserve units from the Portland area would be consolidated there and at Portland Air Base. So that project is kind of an all-or-nothing deal. The way the BRAC worked, base realignment and closure, was that if we build this, they will fund it. The majority of it, about probably 95%, I think, is the total funding of this particular project. But we take in these units from the Army Reserve in order to house them all in one. The grand total would be four facilities would be closed, and one would be consolidated. There's we believe that this is going to go forth. We have some issues with it, but we're still working it to make sure it goes forth. The other package that's before you is in the governor's recommended budget, $11.4 million for upgrade of Woodburn, St. Helens, Newport, and Gresham. Again, these four armories are in the late 40s, early 50s vintage. They're too small. They've got all kinds of issues with them, HVAC, electrical, et cetera. Makes them not real good to rent, so we don't earn as much money as we possibly could from. More importantly, it doesn't serve the soldiers that are there, and frankly, we don't see in the next 20 years that we're going to be able to get the federal money to replace those four armories. So we're kind of at a break point. We actually got a plan. You saw the colored chart up there before. We think we can pretty much live with most of our facilities with not a whole lot of changes, but these are certainly four that seem to fall out on every scenario we run, so that's why they were proposed in this package. And program option package, well, I guess this is where I stop and Ken comes in. I think so. Well, wait a minute. No, this is Prop 500, Homeland Security Emergency Management. I testified before this committee, and I testified before other committees on House Bill 2370. As you know, that's the one that moves Oregon Emergency Management into the Oregon Military Department. We, of course, would like to see that bill as currently at Ways and Means, been referred to Ways and Means from the from the Committee on Disaster Preparedness, and we would like to see that bill, of course, moved into our budget. We believe this is the right thing to do. It coincides with what's going on in the rest of the Northwest, and I think it would align us perfectly with Alaska, Washington, Montana, Idaho, and Nevada, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So that concludes, I sailed through the program option package. That concludes my portion. There is an issue about the 2% reductions. There's a tab in your handout. If you want me to go through this, I can hold and go through them later, or I can just refer to them, and you can look at them, and then if you have any questions, we'll try to answer them.
You know, it would be helpful if you briefly went through at least the big ticket items.
Okay.
Of the 2%
reduction.
Just the general fund.
Obviously, the big ticket program you'll see in here are two areas. One of them is Youth Challenge Program, which would take a significant reduction in general funds, $54,544. Public Affairs, minor reductions in Camp Rialea maintenance. And then if you get down to the other big ones, you find that they're engineering and maintenance oriented, because that's where most of this money actually ends up. The kind of a, you know, in some respects, when we look at 10% reductions, which we have in many different occasions, it's actually a little bit easier process, because then you can just take whole programs and just say we're going to whack those, because then you don't have to. When you take the 2%, then you're trying to spread the pain over a wider version, and that's what this reflects. Total of the $360,572 general fund reduction for 2%. The federal funds associated with it, other funds, is 142. Federal funds, 1.378, for a total of 1.881. 619 would be the total reduction on 2%. Is that quick enough?
Yes, very helpful. Questions? Yeah, I was just remarking that I appreciate you doing this, because a lot of agencies have been resistant to coming up with their 2% reduction. I appreciate that.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I can tell you, after the best part of 20 years of doing this, I'm pretty good at doing reductions. I can pretty well do them in my sleep. This is about the first time that I can recall in a long time that we haven't really had some serious talks about 10% or larger reductions. So this was an easy exercise compared to some we've done in the past.
Mr. Chair. Yes, Senator Nelson.
Thank you.
Is this about water?
On slide 82, you had the two Owen positions moved to Oregon State Police. That Owen issue still just strikes me. What, you're getting rid of those folks, taking the state police? Are you going to have any involvement in Owen, or what's happening?
Well, Mr. Chairman, or Mr. Chairman, Senator Nelson, the way that the conversion would be is that Owen would go with state police and not be inside of OEM. We've had numerous discussions with the different stakeholders, and different groups have been working this, and I think it's a consensus. Well, I know it's a consensus across the board, and everybody has agreed that they think this would be the best place for Owen as it develops, because it's got a way to go and a lot of hurdles to cross before it gets there. And I think based on state police's role, what they have involved with respect to the towers, all the sites that they currently own, would probably be the best to be there inside their shop. We concurred with that, and that's why those positions are out of there.
All right. Anything else?
Mr. Chairman, that completes my portion of the briefing or the testimony. Unless you want me to talk about, there's another requirement about legislative bills and measures and a encroachment report. I can do it now, or I can do it after Director Murphy gets done with OEM.
Why don't we go to OEM?
Okay.
Thank you, Chair Shields, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ken Murphy. I'm the Director of Oregon Emergency Management, and just give you a brief overview here of the organization. As General Caldwell just mentioned, January 30th this year, myself, the General, and the Adjutant General testified before the Joint Committee on Emergency Preparedness and Ocean Policy on House Bill 2370, which moves Oregon Emergency Management and a portion of the Criminal Justice Services Division, which manages the Homeland Security grants, into the Oregon Military Department. And as General Caldwell also mentioned, this mirrors the image and how things are patterned in the Northwest, Alaska, Oregon, Washington, Idaho, Montana, Nevada. And these are clearly our regional partners. We do a lot with those states, and I think that this will support that structure and our ability to work together during times when we don't have a crisis and when times that we do have one, and it will enhance this. In the course of the significant advantages of this associated change in structure, moving Oregon's homeland security and emergency management and disaster coordination apparatus into the military department, I think it obviously eliminates the need for a new agency structure, while at the same time creating a clear, experienced, and tested command structure during emergencies. And I think this will provide support to my office in executing their mission. One thing, and I will mention for the record, I was a member of the National Guard for 29 years, so I know they have a tested and proven system.
But we don't hold that against them.
No.
Oh, no.
But we hold it against you.
I got 36 years.
A lot of the things that the National Guard structure and the way they train, plan at an operational, tactical, and strategic level, they're exercising and those type of things in preparing their soldiers and airmen for their duty is very similar in nature to what I do in planning, training, and exercising at a tactical, operational, strategic level for an unknown disaster. So the complement of their experience and abilities will significantly improve my ability to handle each one of those situations. Clearly, in each portion of emergency management, mitigation, preparedness, response, and recovery, this will help delay any potentials for confusion or misinterpretation of how we respond at a state level in response and recovery efforts, and it'll, the facilitation of the military department into this, I think, will greatly enhance our ability as a state to react to any city or county event or regional event. As our world has changed with Hurricane Katrina, every state had an event they had to respond to. So I think that this will, these resources that the military department bring will substantially support what I do in this effort. Next, I just want to briefly describe the major portions of Homeland Security and Emergency Management. The first one is the Administration for Oregon Emergency Management. This pretty much clearly works itself towards fulfilling the mandates in ORS 401, which is the statute that gives direction on emergency management in the state of Oregon and responsible for coordinating and collaborating, maintaining and expanding the governor's statewide emergency services system. It focuses its strength to the Oregon's overall emergency preparedness, response, and recovery capabilities. A portion of this is funded through the Emergency Management Performance Grant, which is a federal grant from the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, which provides 50% of the funding for personnel and day-to-day cost, with 50% matched by the state general fund. The Emergency Management Performance Grant also supports the state's natural hazard mitigation program, and I bring that up because we do bring a lot of money into the state specifically to do earthquake retrofitting, flood mitigation efforts, moving homes, elevating businesses, that type of thing. And 16 positions in Oregon Emergency Management and Administration support this, including 3 new positions recommended by the governor. The next one is the 911 emergency telephone system, or the 911 public safety answering points across the state. I have a section that supports this, and I will just be brief here. A little bit of history: the 1981 legislature passed the Oregon law requiring an excise tax to support emergency telecommunications networks. It began as a 3% rate in 1995 and switched to a flat 75-cent fee per month for each landline and wireless device capable accessing 911 services. And my hat's off to whoever put that verbiage in there, not knowing the explosion of the wireless community across our nation. Quarterly distributions of this tax collected or made to local jurisdictions to support their 911 operations and systems. And then per ORS 401.792, his tax is scheduled to sunset in January 1, 2008. We have one primary House Bill 2369 that will extend this applicability period for 6 years to January 1, 2014. There's another House Bill 2197 that eliminates the sunset date altogether. And this program comes to us with $67 million in other funds, limitation of 7 positions, one of which is new information systems specialist 7, recommended by the governor. This position is a split 50% under the 911 funds and 50% under the terrorism funds to support computer operations. And also the 911 frame relay network that connects all the public safety answering points and feeds a great amount of the data, GIS platform information and mapping. And this relay network is physically structured and resides in the National Guard facility, the Anderson Readiness Center on State Street here in Salem. Next, I want to talk about the terrorism program. I think most of you probably have heard this called the weapons.
Yes, sir. Representative Edison has a question for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I understood what you described about the 911 system from your perspective. I'm familiar with looking at it from a local perspective, but could you please review for me what the 7 positions do? Specifically what those positions are involved in?
Chair Shield, Representative Nathan, yes. We have a manager that fulfills the management duties of coordinating all the efforts. We have one position that is dedicated to improving, enhancing, and developing mapping and new technology solutions, and also trying to keep track of what new technologies are coming out there, such as text messaging that all of a sudden is affecting 911. The third position is a GIS, purely GIS mapping person that works on trying to help each one of the 911 centers get better mapping information so that they can serve the public safety individuals with accurate, and trying to work the kinks out of 911 over the internet calls that may come from New York for an accident in Oregon, and trying to solve issues like that. The fourth position is one that is there to help each 911 center deal with general issues of how they operate, deal with money issues in their budget, deal with mediation between 911 centers and maybe their users board, that type of thing, to help resolve those issues and help each one in their day-to-day operations. The next position is dedicated to paying bills, primarily that and administrative work. Then the last one is to help back up paying the bills and administrative work also.
Thank you.
Terrorism, as I'd mentioned, commonly known as weapons of mass destruction. You've heard domestic preparedness, different terms, and it is formally titled that in the state police budget. Part of this is funded by the Emergency Management Performance Grant, which I mentioned earlier, and other grants, actually, in all honesty, too numerous to list. They have just grown and grown and grown. There's many different grants now coming out of the Department of Homeland Security and or FEMA that come to different portions of my agency or different agencies across the state. These grants are issued through Homeland Security to assist state agencies and local jurisdictions to facilitate security enhancements, training for emergency response, planning, that type of thing, to better prepare them for all types of terrorism attacks. In this, as I had mentioned earlier, we're acquiring through this proposed move in House Bill 2370 a portion of the Criminal Justice Services Division. There's exactly 5 positions there that are dedicated to administering the Homeland Security grants, the actual mechanics of dealing with all the grant paperwork, the billings, the accountability. As you can see, 5 positions and $52 million in federal funds limitation are moved from the Criminal Justice Service Division. And we continue to see more grants coming up from Homeland Security, so I don't see this changing. One new addition to this is the Information System Specialist 7 that I described previously in the 911 program that will support that, and the infrastructure to help maintain the Domestic Preparedness Program Crisis Communications Network. We're seeing a great deal more of computer systems and communication systems given to us, if you will, or imposed upon us by the Department of Homeland Security that we need to maintain. And these are critical links in our State Emergency Coordination Center with other centers throughout Oregon, throughout the region, and to the National Operations Center, Department of Homeland Security. A total of 10 positions fall under this program with limitation of approximately $1.6 million other funds and $52.8 million in federal funds. In our disaster programs, these programs, the disaster program funds are distributed by the Federal Emergency Management Agency to victims of federally declared disasters, and that is also to victims and to public entities such as city and county governments to deal with the issues of federally declared disasters. It also issues FEMA grants for flood mitigation and pre-disaster mitigation, as I mentioned earlier, about earthquake retrofitting, the buying of homes, moving of businesses, trying to lessen the impact of disasters in the future for Oregon. Flood mitigation grants began in 1997 and have provided funds to relocate, as I mentioned, homes and businesses. Clearly, after the 1996 floods we had here in Oregon, it was very evident that we needed to do a lot of things to prevent future disasters or lessen the likelihood of how severe they will be. Pre-disaster mitigation grants are fairly new, beginning in 2003, and have increased dramatically as Oregon communities and state agencies have successfully applied or received grants in excess of $20 million since 2004. Oregon is in the top 5 states in the nation that have been able to appropriately apply for the grant, show benefit-cost analysis that would support lessening the impact of disasters in Oregon. And we work closely with the local agencies. This is a competitive system. We're very proud of it in beating out literally other cities and states across the nation and how to use these funds to develop hazard mitigation plans, seismic retrofits, and other projects. And this does require the state to have a approved mitigation plan for the Department of Homeland Security that clearly maps out what our projects are and what's our phased approach to try and deal with the most severe hazards we have here in Oregon. These mitigation grants have a 75-25% split where the applicants have to bear the 25% responsibility, and the programs are administered by staff funded under the Emergency Management Performance Grant that I mentioned earlier, and that brings over $4.6 million other funds, non-limited, and $8.1 million federal funds, non-limited limitation. The last piece.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have two questions about what you just covered on the disasters program. One is, I believe you said 25% of a grant would be covered by the applicant, 75% would be federal. Is the applicant the local jurisdiction or the state?
Chair Shields and Representative Nathan, it's the local applicant or agency. It could be a city or a county or an individual.
Okay, thank you. And the second question?
Yes.
Thank you. I'm intrigued by grants to local jurisdictions to become more disaster resistant. Short of fixing levees, for example. Could you give me an example of one or two proposals that we would recognize from Oregon for an area to become more disaster resistant?
Chair Shields, Representative Nathan, two come to my mind immediately. Tillamook County is probably one of the number one counties in the nation that we have brought through cooperative agreements in this program millions of dollars to try and lessen the impact, because we know it's going to flood every year. And so we have done a great deal, and I can provide you a lot more details if you want. We've actually bought out businesses on the lower level of 101 in Tillamook, the city, and we've also elevated businesses and homes, and we've also gone down to the Siletz River, and we currently have elevated 57 homes along the river because we know it's going to happen. They're not going to move out of their homes, so we do that. Second one is projects that we do in Central Oregon and various counties dealing with mitigation of the fuel load on the forest floor, trying to remove lower branches, underbrush, scrub brush that clearly will help the fire burn and eventually destroy the trees, which if that's cleared out, generally the trees will not burn. They'll just char the lower portion of the tree, but if that underbrush is there, it will burn and destroy the forest.
Thank you.
The last piece, the Chemical Stockpile Emergency Preparedness Program, began in 1988 following a congressional mandate by the Department of Defense. These are federal emergency management, provides the federal funds to increase the emergency response and protection of the 35,000 citizens, probably 35,000 plus, that live near the Umatilla Army Depot, which encompasses Morrow and Umatilla counties in Oregon. Chemical weapons are stored there, and we're in the process of destruction. We have six employees stationed in Pendleton, Oregon, to work with federal, state, and local agencies to ensure Oregon maintains an effective emergency preparedness programs for those areas that are closest. It's in a sequence based upon the type of chemical, and I didn't put a lot of detail in the notes because it will take too much time. Representative Nelson knows this by heart, but depending upon the type of nerve agent, there's different plans, how close you are to the depot and how far you are away. So there's quite a few detailed plans that deal with that. We finally begin destroying the chemical weapons in September of 2004. It's done by a chemical or a burning incinerator. The destruction schedule is set to be completed between the year 2010 and 2012, assuming everything goes perfect. But there is a plan, in case it doesn't, to go out to the year 2021. And this is a robotic process that destroys the munitions. In one new position is recommended by the governor, an information system specialist 7, which will maintain the critical network programs associated with the chemical stock program. These are unique Army and federal systems to support the management of the day-to-day activities of the depot, knowing exactly where each employee, where each weapon is, which way the wind is blowing, some very sophisticated computer equipment. To include alert and warning systems and crisis coordination programs and a unique network established to support the program to protect the public in the event of an accident or an incident there. The chemical stockpile program has 8 positions and a limitation of $33,615. Other funds, $36.9 million, federal funds non-limited, and approximately $5 million in federal funds. Your questions, that's all I, just a brief overview of the organization.
Go back to Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Ken. Thank you for the selling issue. It bothers me. It's coming by your Homeland Security be able to high end surveillance system if we ever get failed, or how is that contemplated?
Chair Shields, Senator Nelson, it should have no problem tying into actually whatever Owen proposes, you know, the final solutions are. Our systems, we have two or three different systems, but either through gateway patches, through computers, or different things, we should be able to very easily hook to them. And really all that we're in need of is tower space or that type of thing. The radios, you know, we have very few of those, actually, and so it should not be a problem.
Follow-up on what I'm hearing is that everybody's got a system. I mean, you've got systems, the hospitals have systems, the Hermiston police have a system, and Brookings police have a system. And so is it, in your view, possible to develop a system of all these systems so that everybody can talk to everybody?
Chair Shields, Senator Nelson, the easy answer is yes. The devil would be in the details, but I think, you know, the real truth of the matter is, yes, I found this with Homeland Security. That's one of the issues I'm dealing with right now, is we're getting so many different systems from all of the 22 different Homeland Security agencies that are all creating their different systems. And so I think it is possible. It clearly would take, you know, some very close collaboration. And my particular system is not anything huge or unique. It's really pretty simple. Dependent upon, you know, the current structure that OSP has. I also use amateur radio as part of my network. So my system would be very easy to put in there. But I agree, there's so many different systems out there that I think if we were to put them side by side, and I think it would be pretty simple, probably some money to change some equipment, not necessarily buy new systems, but there's many network solutions out there that can hook them together, you know, with relatively simple ease. The only question as we go into the future of the Federal Communications Commission mandating everybody go to narrowband technology and what they call P25 compliant radios, there's some expense there because a lot of organizations have not actually purchased some of those things, and some of the P25 compliant radios are running $3,000 a piece. So there is some devil in the details there, you know, but I do believe it is possible that to have different systems become hooked together and use one system. Yeah, let me add, General Caldwell just mentioned, Churchill, Senator Nelson, your area, we placed a 450 megahertz system in the chemical stockpile region, CSEP country in Umatilla-Morrow counties, and it will be very simple with a few gateway devices to hook that in to the Oregon Wireless Interoperability Network, even depending upon what is actually chosen or put in place. So the systems that we have like that, and that was a little over a $10 to $12 million project in those two counties, about 12 to 14 tower sites and quite a bit of radio equipment that goes in buildings and cars and radios on people's gear should very easily fit in that with no change of actual system. It'll just be some connection devices.
Mr. Chairman, if I might just add one more comment for Senator Nelson's question, which is, I think your question was more ONB in OEM versus someplace else. And I guess if you look at the stakeholders involved in ONB, it includes, you know, a lot of different people. You got ODOT, you got state police, you got
corrections,
forestry. We're a bit player, and I think Ken described, you know, his having a rather small network of radios. The big guys are ODOT, and these folks, and particularly the first responders. Now, if you try to bring in all of the local governments to make this thing a seamless interoperable network, the challenge then becomes immense. And I think from a practical standpoint, I guess we'd like to term it similar to the Manhattan Project. I mean, it takes scientists and experts to build it. It may be something that we could execute eventually, military department or somebody else, but it takes a different set of skills and different set of processes in order to get it stood up. And I think the big users are going to be OSP and NoDOT are going to be your two big predominant users. So they should probably have their the dominance in that group, which is why when it was discussed through all the stakeholders, it was felt that they were the best place to put it. We weren't running away from it, nor were we standing up and saying, bring it to us. We were sitting there saying, well, it's new to us too. But right now, Owen is processed to get to this position where we need to be in the state in 2013. Is that it?
Yes.
And I think what's being proposed to the legislature right now is a process to get there, not necessarily a absolute, here is the plan, because I'm not sure anybody can actually put their finger on that plan. I think there hasn't been enough work done on that yet, and they want a process to get to that point where they can say, well, now we've done this, we've looked at it, and here is a possible solution or a variant of several. So I think that's what they're asking for right now in the process, and we're completely willing to work with them and stay partners with them and stay on the committee, but we firmly believe the Oregon State Police is the best place to have that.
Right. How much do we have left, or are you at the...
Mr. Chairman, the last thing on my chart to check all the blocks from that we were given on our presentation is two items. One is the legislative bills and measures, and right now, without going into any great excruciating detail, we're tracking 42. Actually, it's more than that after I looked today, but I didn't have my update. 42 bills. I noticed one just today, as a matter of fact, that talks about rewriting the statute on the emergency relief fund. I think it's identical to what the legislature passed 2 years ago, but I haven't had a chance to review it, and also appropriating money, and of course it will come to Ways and Means before it goes anywhere. It'll go through the committee and then be passed over here for disposition. And I also know of two other bills that are going to be up this week that I didn't have listed on here that deal with Youth Challenge Program, requesting additional funds to expand Youth Challenge. These weren't submitted by us, but they're coming through the process. I haven't done a costing on either one of those, but I'm sure by the time it gets to this, to the committee, the start-out committee, that it'll be down here, and between Mr. Borden and us, we can come up with a number of what those two represent. Last item I have on my check sheet is an encroachment report that the September 2006 Emergency Board directed that we get back to the legislature. This began when we were looking for approval to buy 18 acres next to Camp Rialia. We're still in the process of that purchase. The report is not complete. We delayed the execution on the report because after we looked at it, we also needed to look at other installations. So we went back to National Guard Bureau to seek funds for it, so I didn't have to pay it out of state money because it's fairly limited, obviously, and we try not to do that. And we were able to pick up $96,000 in January, and so we delayed it in order to get the money and then put it out. So it's out on the street right now. We should have the report done hopefully by summer, mid to late summer, that will correspond with that request from the emergency board. So that concludes my comments. Tomorrow we have on tap for our reintegration team will be here tomorrow for the public part of the testimony, along with the representative from the Department of Veterans Affairs, from the Veterans Hospital up in Portland, who does a lot of the post-traumatic stress work with our returning veterans, our returning soldiers. So, pending your questions, I have concluded my report, my presentation.
Thank you very much. You did a very thorough job, and we appreciate your work on behalf of the country as well as the state. Colleagues, any other questions?
Just not on
Senator Nelson.
I guess the camera for the committee's knowledge, too. Given Tele Learning Project, you basically got the worst stuff done, and now you're just working on the mass.
Chair Shields and Senator Nelson, just about the worst of the worst is nerve agent, GB, or sarin, the ones, and they're just about done, should be done, hopefully, I won't commit, this is the Army, maybe the summer, early fall, into 2008, and then really the only thing that will be left then is mustard gas, and they'll go through that process of destroying that with hopefully truly being done by 2010, and then a portion to actually go through, close out of the incinerator and the jobs and all of the different issues. So we're just about done with the worst possible chemicals that pretty much can kill you in a couple minutes.
That was a lightning thing to end on.
Well, the good news is everything is working very well. They've had a couple, since it's robotic and mechanical, they've had some issues. There's a device that chops parts of the round apart, and it's created some fires. And so they've solved that through engineering and science. And so it's going along pretty smoothly, and all is well. In fact, they just recently, the group that runs the incinerator just recently won a safety award for no accidents, no injuries. They've done very well out there for dealing with something that dangerous, which is corroding and eroding. The shells and the casings are 50 plus years old, maybe 40 plus years old, and the chemicals are so toxic that it is destroying the casings that are holding them.
Last thing I'd say, Mr. Chairman, if we're going to go out across the street, we have there's two communication vehicles there that I'd certainly invite you to, talking about interoperability. These folks, if God had a number, I'm sure they could talk to him with all the whiz-bang stuff that they have in there. This is a mobile organization. It can go anywhere. It is not a first responder. I'll emphasize that, but they work hand in glove with first responders. When first responders have an incident, soldiers and airmen out there will probably tell you that mobile lab, they had an incident just this last weekend, I believe it was, with a unknown substance they found out later was packing material. But if you can't identify it, these folks can show up and come to your doorstep, help that fire department or that police department that found something they don't know what it is. So it's a great outfit. Certainly we're real proud of it, and they are certified. And now, of course, we're starting to certify replacements for them because of it takes 2 years to get them certified. And we're glad that's happened, but it took a long time to get there. But they're up and operational now, and we'd certainly enjoy you to visit.
Okay. And just to underline again, tomorrow, colleagues, we will get started on the reintegration work. And you know, no matter how we feel about the war in Iraq, wars around the world, I think we all agree that we need to do everything we possibly can to help our troops reintegrate. So we'll set aside the contentious part of it, and we'll all join on the same side and figure out how we can help our troops who are coming back to the state tomorrow. So we look forward to that. We'll head out, and this meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.